The Leap is proudly supported by and brought to you by Glenn's Garden Market, a local grocery store, deli, and craft beer bar in DuPont Circle at 20th and S Streets. Good food from close by. For more information, visit glensgardenmarket.com.
You're tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Hi, welcome to The Leap, coming to you live from the Lion Hotel in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Sarah Gordon. I own a small business, Gordy's Pickle Jar, and one of my favorite things about being a small business owner is talking with and learning from other entrepreneurs. And every Wednesday, I get to have these conversations on air by bringing together small business owners from a wide range of disciplines to share stories, wisdom, tips, and advice. On today's show, I'm super excited to chat with Kata Mayorga, owner and CEO of El Camino Travel, a highly curated travel experience. Thanks for joining me today,
Hello.
Kata.
Hi. Hola.
So before we talk about El Camino,
yes.
I wanted to chat a bit about the road that led you to the travel industry. What were you doing kind of prior to the startup?
Yeah, I think, so I always tell people I never meant to start a travel company. I actually was working in international development. That's what I studied in undergrad at University of Washington. Moved to DC because, you know, this is the mecca for that type of work. And was having some incredible experiences working mostly in Latin America and the Caribbean, helping social entrepreneurs and enterprises, and really trying to figure out innovative ways to be able to tackle a lot of community problems, problems that were aimed what we call the base of the pyramid. So households that were making less than $2 a day. So very different from travel.
Right.
And I actually had my own consulting business in that for a few years. So I actually had already dipped my toes in entrepreneurship. I always knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I just felt like, you know, if I'm working, I'm a hard worker. So I was like, if I'm working this hard for someone else, what would happen if I work this hard for myself? So my first foray into entrepreneurship was consulting.
So did you work for USAID?
Yeah. Yes. Well, I worked on projects that either were funded by them or Department of State, but I worked for Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, American Planning Association, Mercy Corps, all different types of large organizations. And then I worked with a lot of small nonprofits, or what they call social enterprises. So businesses that had a strong social impact.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I was doing that for a long time, and was actually in Guatemala for a consulting gig there. And that's when I had my, I guess, two aha moments for El Camino. I had the weekend off, so I went to a place called Lake Atitlan. Have you been to Guatemala before?
I haven't, no.
It's stunning, and there's this huge lake. It's the deepest lake in Central America, I think, and it's surrounded by three volcanoes. And I just noticed how often people were on their phone, including myself, or their iPads. This is 6 months before the selfie stick boom. So you can
wow.
only imagine.
So what year is this?
This is 2014.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's way worse now.
Yeah, exactly. And I just noticed, you know, my views were being completely crowded by telephones and iPads, and just realized the experience of travel had actually changed with these tools in our pocket. And the next step is that people wanted to get connected to Wi-Fi and share it to social media. So Instagram was pretty new still at the time, but Instagram, Facebook. So it's just the reason for traveling, the reason for being on your phone all the whole time was quickly shifting. So I noticed that. And then on my last day there, I was in a taxi with a taxi driver in Guatemala, and we were talking about everything going on in the region, particularly around drug violence and the drug industry. And out of nowhere, he goes, you know, thank God for tourism. And I was like, oh, that's super interesting. Why do you say that? And he goes, it provides me a high income and provides me a reliable income. The only other industry that can fight, that can compete with what I'm making in tourism is the drug industry. So thank God for tourism. That's what's keeping me out of the drug industry. And I was just like,
wow, that's powerful. Whoa. Yeah.
Yeah. And working in international development, you know, I had seen a lot of amazing projects, but more often than not, a lot of failed projects. And it just followed a very repetitive cycle and destructive cycle where the grant money would run up, jobs, the project would end, jobs would be lost. Even the jobs that were created during the project didn't really pay well. And on the plane ride back, I just couldn't stop thinking of those two moments and thinking, okay, well, what's missing in travel that could actually add value and create long-term financial stability for these local entrepreneurs? And I knew I needed to create something that people were willing to pay for and actually wanted. So that kind of was the first thoughts into El Camino.
Wow, and you did it. So what was it like kind of entering into the travel space, you know, like the travel industry with no like prior experience?
I'm still learning a lot. I think what, you know, one thing I did was I didn't completely leap in, I guess, and just do it right off the bat. I continued to work as a consultant for about a year. That actually provided me a lot of flexibility so I could take a job for a few months and then have a few months to work on this idea. But one thing I always say when I get asked about, like, oh, how'd you start El Camino, I think is take risks for sure, but take strategic risks. And for me, what I decided to do was definitely start, well, one, just asking people about what they wanted. I have this idea. What were your thoughts? What were your feedback? And the idea was, you know, at that time was, okay, creating really interesting travel experiences, immersive travel experiences, which is becoming more of a common term now, but back in 2014, it was not used at all. And then having this photographer along documenting the experience so that you could get, you could go back to being in the moment.
So you were kind of trying to figure out like what the traveler wanted, but at mm-hmm. the same time you had this idea and you spent a lot of time in Central America, right?
I'm Colombian. South America.
Yeah. South America. Yeah. So kind of that helped. Like you knew like how you were going to like kind of curate the experience.
Yeah. I think, speaking Spanish fluently definitely helps. But traveling extensively through the region helped a lot. I've been going to Colombia my whole life, but in college, I studied abroad in Costa Rica. And then my junior year, I was sick of school and I was adding credits. And so I took 6 months and backpacked on my own through South America.
Amazing.
So that was a really great way to, at that time I was staying in hostels, of course, and in having a very different type of travel experience. But yeah, all of that did help me to, I had a strong understanding of what I thought was missing in the travel industry. What more than anything, like I'm building experiences that I would actually want because I am our customer. So I really was trying to think through, what was I craving in the travel industry?
Yeah. And just to back up a little bit. So you're like, who would you identify as your customer?
So at that time, our customer definitely is different now, but at that time it was mostly millennials. So it was broad. We started broad, like millennials that were looking to go to more off the beaten destinations was kind of, that's who we identified as our customer at the time. And that's definitely evolved. So we're definitely, a lot of the people that join our trips are millennials, older millennials, as we say, with higher disposable income but now it's spread to families and even baby boomers. And so now we say we're for more of the experiential traveler.
Okay. Would you identify them as having like higher, disposable income versus just kind of like wanting to have like more experiences versus like more things or?
Well, for us too, we dump our heart and soul into what we design, and to create a really special experience, it does, take money. And at the end of the day, we're not going around, we're not doing the nonprofit model. We're doing, you know, I saw that didn't work in international development. I have to create an actual business. And so for us to create the type of experiences we actually want, it's a different price point. So we're not luxury by any means, but we're not budget travel. So we're more in the middle of the road. We knew that's the price point we really needed to be at to continue to be profitable, to scale so that we, at the end of the day, follow our North Star, which is have more impact in the destinations where we're visiting, and to actually be able to provide the experience that we want. So
what are the a couple of things that kind of make El Camino different from your normal everyday travel agency? I mean, you guys obviously go deeper into the local culture and things like that, but what would you say are, a handful of things that kind of separate you from the rest?
Yeah, so we are small group travel experiences. We have small group travel experiences. We have private trips now. But with our small group travel experiences, I think the one thing that we've gotten a lot of recognition for is the photography aspect. So having the photographer on the trip documenting the experience.
Great. Yeah. So do you find that with that photographer that people are kind of more in the moment and they don't have their phones out or
definitely. You know, yeah. We, it's slightly shifting again. I mean, technology is advancing. So now with Instagram stories, that's a whole other thing.
Right.
And we don't have, obviously it's a lot harder to have someone documenting Instagram stories, but overall, when I see our travelers and other travelers around us, our travelers are definitely more in the moment. And we hear them say that. They say, well, why am I going to take a picture? I'm going to get a beautiful, stunning photo of myself tomorrow morning that I can share. That's going to be way better than any photo I'll take on my phone. So we definitely do see them. And we also tried, we're not messaging get perfect Instagram vacation photos, because that's really not what it's about. It's more, we really are committed to this messaging that it's more about be in the moment, be present, because that has been so lost right now with technology. Go back to what travel used to be, and also, to be able to really form connections with local cultures and local individuals. You have to be present and you have to be listening and you have to be asking, you have to be curious. If you have a screen between you and that person,
it's not going to happen.
It just seems like it's almost like a show, or it's like that person is a character that you want to document for your,
Right.
Social media.
I love my iPhone, but sometimes I'm just like, oh, I'd love for them all to just go away.
I think about that on a daily basis.
So there seems to be a real significant link between your past career and your new company. I mean, you guys are both previously and now you're trying to create economic opportunity for an income for communities in a way that's promotes and respects local culture.
Yes.
So that's cool.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same but different path.
Totally. It's, it is focusing on economic development in more developing countries. And so, but it is, I think one thing that's important and it's a little different than with international development is that product, I guess, or service and profitability are actually at the forefront. And it's not profitability to be more, to get more money and, to be more wealthy. It's profitability. Because then you can have more impact. You can scale more. You can, that's what it leads to. And that's kind of why that's at the forefront. And we have to ensure we're creating a service that people actually will pay for, to be able to be profitable. So, that's kind of where the mindset shifts a little bit from international development.
Right. So how many trips do you guys do a year now?
It's changing because we're doing private trips now. And we just launched a sister company, Boutique Columbia.
Congrats.
Thank you. It's focused on really highly personalized and customized experiences in Colombia.
So is that the private leg of it?
No, this is even a more, I call it the sophisticated older sister of El Camino.
Okay.
So it's more aimed towards the luxury market. So it's a different price point. And so that's kind of our new sister company that we just launched a few months ago. So we have clients that we're working with for that. We have private trip clients for El Camino. That's a little bit different.
Like private, just kind of like me and my three friends want to. Yeah. Okay.
Want to go. And, then, yeah. And we have, it's not as customized. So you go on the website and you say, okay, I want to go to Colombia. And there's like five different itineraries you can choose from. But the difference is that it's not like a tour package. It's not like mass produce. It's a itinerary and I don't want to say package because that really undervalues what it is, but it's a set itinerary that has been highly curated by our team, and that really continues to be the El Camino experience. Allows you to be still very much immersed in the culture, get access to certain experiences you wouldn't be able to get on your own, but at the same time have the flexibility of going whatever dates you want with whatever amount of people you want to be part of the trip.
Right. So how do you intend on managing that aspect of it? Do you find it's going to be challenging? I mean, say tomorrow all of a sudden 10 people book trips that are back to back to back to back.
Yeah.
Cause you go on every one of the trips, right?
No,
or you don't.
No.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We actually have local, we call them local hosts. So we have local hosts in all the countries we, go to that are really the heart and soul of our trips. And so I do still go on trips once in a while because I actually love being a host, but, to be able to scale too, we have to have really great people on the ground, which we're lucky that we have an amazing team in all our destinations that really carry the flag of El Camino and the spirit of El Camino in all our trips. So
you guys are in Nicaragua, Colombia,
Cuba and Colombia. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And do you plan on expanding to more?
No, we're actually doing the opposite.
You're
going to
focus on one.
We're really going to focus on Colombia.
Awesome.
Yeah. So Colombia is just growing exponentially in tourism and in interest.
It's on all the hot new destinations
list.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. I'm from there. For me, it actually, what's happening in Colombia right now really reflects kind of the reasons why I got into tourism. So Colombia just signed a peace agreement at the end of 2016 between the government and the FARC, which is a national guerrilla group, and the country was in civil war for 60 years. So this is huge because there's generations of Colombians who have never known what peace is and have always been living in conflict. That being said, it wasn't the last few years wasn't the Pablo Escobar years or the narco-terror years. But still, there was always that tension. But this is the first time huge parts of the country are opening up for the first time in decades because the FARC are gone. And so not only is Colombia opening up for foreigners for the first time, lots of parts of it, it's also opening up for Colombians. There's a lot of Colombians who haven't been even able to explore their own country because of the civil war. So it's pretty awesome. We, have worked closely with ProColombia, the tourism agency there, and there's just lots of opportunities to really go deep. And fun fact, Colombia is the second most biodiverse country in the world. So there's just so much to see.
Yeah.
You have everything, the Caribbean, the Pacific Ocean. It really is the hidden gem of South America that people don't really know. And unfortunately, because of programs like Narcos, have a very skewed perception of what it is.
Yeah, Sheila, my partner, she just went to a deep dive of Narcos on Netflix.
I watched it because I wanted to know what all the hype was about.
Mm-hmm.
I think, yes, the reality, that was people's real life. People lived in fear. We actually have a Colombian photographer who's part of our team, who is from Medellin, and a Pablo Escobar bomb went off two blocks from our house, shattered the windows of her family's living room, cut up her dad's face. So it's like, it was a real thing. Her brother got kidnapped. So I don't want to underscore the fear people lived in, but that was also in the 90s.
Yeah, and or the significance of the error.
But the problem is people, and we still get these, we get this question on a daily basis, they still think it's like that, and it's nothing like that. Medellin is actually probably the most progressive, one of the most progressive cities in the world. Urban planners come and study it from everywhere, from Amsterdam to Rwanda. It's the public transportation system's insane. I live in H Street. I wish the street cable or yeah, the
you don't think the metro, car? The metro, the DC metro compares.
or I was gonna say their Transvia, which is their streetcar, is like, it's like the Jetsons. It's like streamlined. It's so beautiful. It goes so quickly through the street, and then I am like on the streetcar in H Street, and I'm like, oh, I really. Wow, Medellin's like light years ahead of us. How is this possible? The capital of the United States. So I just think, and people don't see that side of Medellin a lot. So it's interesting.
But people are, I mean, obviously because it's been on so many of the like hot destination lists, people are like now becoming familiar with like.
Totally. And I think that's part of our role too, is to show a very different perception of Colombia. And you know, I think our community is a very curious community. And so we are curious too. We're always asking questions, and we also try to share knowledge. So through our Instagram stories, through our newsletters, we're really showing what Colombia is, what South America is in general, all the creativity that's happening there, all the progressive design. And so that is, I think we're playing a role in helping to change that perception. You know, is Colombia safe is the question we asked on our Instagram stories the other day, and the responses we got were so fascinating. But
what was like the percentage of yes to no people?
It was actually not that bad. I think it was like 80% said yes. So that's great. And then we just showed
80% said safe.
Yes, yeah. It's safe, which is great. But there's 20% that still said no. You know, that's like, it's, and it's.
So you want to shift that mindset.
Yeah. 99-1 would be great.
Right.
That think it's safe. Yeah.
So you kind of answered this like in the beginning, but your company motto is to be a traveler, not a tourist. You know, I think you touched on it a lot, but like, why is that so important to you?
Yeah, I think there's, I think you can go to a country. So I think my thought on that has shifted a lot in the past few years, especially with Instagram. So a lot of people are now traveling for the gram to get that one image. And that's what I'm seeing.
It's an expensive.
It's expensive Instagram, but it's honestly like what's happening.
Yeah.
I've seen tons of articles, read tons of articles.
I mean, I don't even think you have to go so far as like the travel. I think just people are living their everyday life for something, you know,
to document something. And
that's like Instagrammable, you know, versus just living their
Exactly. And I'm not judging anyone, because I definitely have done it myself, or, you know, I'm probably going to take an Instagram of us after this Instagram story. But I do think there's a healthy balance. And I do think like don't like completely isolate yourself from it, but don't make it everything. And so really, I think where that phrase now has gone, what it means to me, be a traveler, not a tourist, is don't just travel to get pretty pictures. Like, put your phone down, travel to get to be inspired by the culture, by the local people, to get a different perception, to get a diverse perspective. I don't think any city or any destinations can be told by one person alone or one story. So that's something we really try to do, is show all different types of perspectives to our travelers so they understand a complex situation like Colombia and its history from the indigenous perspective, from the Afro-Colombian perspective.
I love it, because one of my best travel experiences, and I feel like I've traveled extensively, was when I me and Sheila went to Tuscany, and we had our friend who's Italian, and his parents, you know, have houses in all around Tuscany. But anyways, he was our travel guide. We didn't one thing, and he just like,
yes,
it was amazing. Like, we just like did a deep dive into
their
culture, and it was extraordinary.
Totally. And that's exactly like our local hosts. They feel like a friend. You know, we want them to feel like a friend. They're not like a stiff tour guide. You're going to go party with them. You're going to break bread with them. You're going to learn from them. And they really are giving you a deep perspective into the destination while still being the responsible mama bear or papa bear of the group and making sure like everyone's on time and things are working seamlessly, or if there's an issue that, you know, they can deal with it. So it's a good combination. And the idea, we want people to go and really, I mean, make it easy to have an incredible time and an immersive time. Just book your trip, buy your ticket, and we take care of the rest. So I think that's really kind of what's important to us.
Yeah, it definitely takes a load off, you know, trying to organize your trip and figure out every little thing that you're going to do. And,
I've read that an average traveler, or like when you're planning your trip, you go to over 70 websites, and we did our own survey and people were spending between 13 to 21 hours on average, like 95% of people in planning
for
their trip,
like their week,
figuring out what they're gonna do, where they're gonna eat. And that's kind of, we just take care of that. Like, we're on top of all the trends. We're really tapped into what we say the local creative economies of each destination. We understand like what's popping up, and give our travelers access to that. And
so great.
It evolves. So that's kind of, we stay on top of it is a huge thing.
So what would be like your best business advice you'd give to someone trying to, like start a startup, tongue twister, in the travel industry?
So I think, there are tons of startups popping up in the travel industry, which is great.
Like similar to you guys, or like competition for you guys, or just...
No, just like doing different things to, like longer term travel, or traveling and working type models. So there's a lot of, I think, great things that are happening in the travel industry that is needed, because it pushes the more established larger companies to also evolve too. But I would say just understand your value proposition, like what makes you different and unique compared to everyone else, because that is what's going to be able, and how do you tell that story in a really genuine way? Because that's really going to be able to lead to your success. And every company has a different story. So it's like, why did you want to start a travel company? Like, why did you decide to take that risk? Because it is a risk. And how do you tell that story, and how do you channel that passion?
I read somewhere that, you know, early on, I think your advice was to fail fast and fail early.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit more about like that lesson and how you came to it? I mean, did you kind of stumble when you first started out, or?
Oh, man, I don't think I can even, I'm pretty sure I read that somewhere, the fail fast, fail cheap. I actually don't remember, or I don't know if I came up with it, but I will, from personal experience, it's been so important to me. And I think that's why I read it, and like it really resonated with me. Because you need to figure out what works and doesn't work. Like, even if you think you have a great idea, you have to understand like how it's interpreted, and when you're stuck in your head so much, especially, you know, as a solo entrepreneur. So I think the easiest way is just to get it out there and try to test it in a way where you don't lose a crazy amount of money, and get feedback right away, and then adjust and pivot from there. So I think that's important.
I think with an understanding that, you know, if you do kind of fail, you know, early, that you're still going to have failures along the way.
Oh, for
you know,
sure.
It's kind of like big...
It's a
one big trip.
And if you're exactly, and if you're doing something for the first time, if you're doing something different, if you're trying to push your industry, you're gonna fail along the way. And we're still failing at times and still seeing what works and doesn't work. We've had a number of small failures this year, but they're small failures, right? They don't we don't, it's not that they're going to put us out of business, but we're like, oh, that didn't work. All right, we got to figure something else out. Or why didn't that work? Do we need to try it in a different way this time?
Yeah.
So I think that's the difference. You, to grow as a business, you have to fail.
Yeah, as an individual.
Individual,
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So what's El Camino's kind of like next big goal?
So our next big goal is growing by diving in deeper into one destination, which we kind of talked about. Really focusing on Colombia is huge for us moving forward, and being able to help shape tourism as it exponentially grows in these next years, and help to shape the tourism industry and be a strong player in that.
I'm curious, how much has it grown since like the peace treaty tourism?
I don't know facts off the top of my head. Sorry, I should know that. But I think it was the largest in 2017. It was the largest international revenue stream for the country. So that's significant. I mean, it was in the, I think, over $5 billion or something like that, which is a lot for, or I can't remember exactly how much, but it was a lot of
significant
money. It's
yeah.
significant. So it's growing. And as you're seeing, like, just as a passer, someone that's reading a magazine, that you're seeing it come up a lot on the hot list. So that's just only going to have it grow more.
Yeah, yeah. I'm also dying to get there. Well, I know that we can't wait to see what you do in the next 5 years with El Camino.
Thank you.
We're all keeping our eyes on you. So, love having you here today.
Thank you so much
for coming on the show.
Yes.
That's all for today. Thanks for everyone for tuning in. We'll be back next week at noon for a special segment with Glenn's Garden Market.
Tune in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service. Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO. On Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening. All right, that live show just finished here on Full Service Radio at the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Stick with us. We'll be right back with some more live programming soon.